Hey, football fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Bedrosian throws to Sandberg, and the pitch is grounded to second base. Thompson has it, throws to first. It's over! 27 years of waiting have come to an end. The Giants have won the pennant.
It is time for Thompson to Clark, and Brad is on vacation. He's hanging out in Vegas. I think he's going to go to the opening night of the Golden Knights. So instead, we have Jared Seidler from Baseball Prospectus. You can see my hat I'm representing.
I love that hat. Yeah.
So we're going to talk some Giants baseball ops stuff because I saw some tweets from you when Buster Posey was announced as the president of baseball ops, and you were like, huh? Like, really?
That was also the reaction of most of the people within the industry I discussed this with. So, yeah.
It's funny because a couple of weeks prior, when the story, maybe it was even more than a couple of weeks, when the story came out that the Matt Chapman signing was helped by Buster Posey taking it to the finish line. In the Bay Area, I don't know if you know this, but on the Athletic side, Andy Baggerly had the story on Posey, and then San Francisco Chronicle, John Shea, and I think it was Susan Slusser, they had a different story. Not exactly different, but they were like, Farhan still did most of it. He was in the hospital. Scott Boras was very vocal about being pro-Farhan on this thing. And then as it turns out, you know, this thing was leaning towards Posey the entire way, and Brad and I were joking. We were like, okay, is Buster Posey really going to be running this team next year? And we were like, no, because it doesn't make sense. Like, he's never done it before. Like, what if they were like a tag team, like Buster's the face, Farhan kind of keeps his job for one more year, and they kind of figure that out. And then it's like, nope, Buster's the guy. And we were kind of incredulous because we didn't really believe that was what was going to happen. And it happened. And I can't imagine your community thinking that this is a good idea in any way.
So my assumption, if you, and I was paying attention to the weird stuff with the Chapman extension and the weird media stuff, and he'd also, if you go back to the Ohtani pursuit, he was like kind of leading the Ohtani brigade or whatnot, and he had shown a greater level of involvement. I thought he was going to end up in like a special assistant type of role, kind of like Jeff Bagwell has in Houston, where we make jokes about Jeff Bagwell being like the shadow president of baseball operations, but he doesn't have the title and he's not like outright running the day to day. He's just kind of there giving a lot of input and maybe pushing certain moves and pushing against other moves and pushing certain personnel decisions, but he's not like in the office every day. These are tough jobs. These are like 70, 80 hour a week, like no life jobs. And I know, you know, Posey's married, he's got kids.
Yes.
He retired pretty early, which generally kind of infers you want to spend time with your family more. Yeah, this is, this is something that happens a lot more often in other sports, right? Especially as you mentioned hockey earlier. Hockey players can go right into lead type front office roles, and it's not that uncommon. I remember Garth Snow did that a number of years ago to mix success, and other players have spent like a year or two and then moved into that type of role. Posey was on the Giants board of directors, and he obviously had some level of involvement the last couple of years, right? Yes. So it's not like he walked straight off of the field into the general manager's office, you know. John Lynch, another retired player who kind of accelerated very fast into a lead front office role. But in baseball, over, I would say, the last 30 or 40 years, this has just become not even something that happens. Like, I couldn't even find a recent comparable. You're going back to, like, when Jerry Reinsdorf pulled, like, Hawk Harrelson straight out of the booth in, like, 1983. Like, it's like that long. Just the idea, there's former players who have done, say, 3-5 years in a role and then come in as like a number two in a front office.
Right. I think Ruben Amaro Jr., yes. Like, he retired and then immediately became like an assistant or something.
The front office. Sam Fold did that. He retired, he became. He was basically the analytics conduit between the field staff and the analytics team with the Phillies. And he had like some special assistant type roles. And then when Dombrowski was named president of baseball operations, they named him general manager to try and groom him to be a potential successor down the road. Chris Young, who's now the Rangers president of baseball operations, when he retired, he went straight into the league office. He rose and became a senior vice president in the league office. And then the Rangers hired him away again for the number two role with the intent of grooming him for a number one role. And if Posey had come in at a number two or a number three job title, it would have been like, yeah, that's a little bit weird, but like not like completely out of left field. No, they came in and they're turning their entire baseball operations over to him. And I honestly, and I talked to a decent number of people that work team side about this just because it was a fascinating topic to discuss with people for like the 72 hours after it happened. It's like one of those things everyone wanted to gossip about. I talked to a couple of people who had crossed paths with Posey at various points who had worked with the Giants and maybe had just trying to get a better sense of whether he had any sort of behind the scene qualifications for this that we didn't know about. And I still don't know. Like, I don't, the type, like, if you told me he was going to be a field manager, like the types of things he did in terms of like staff leadership and preparation and kind of the overall catcher game management jobs, those would actually make a lot of sense to transfer as a field manager. We joke all the time that, retired white catchers become field managers. You know, A.J. Hinch is the classic example of that. And he, frankly, you know, kind of moved up too fast, and he's now on job number three and on job really successful on job number two, obviously, the cheating incident in Houston. But now in job number three in Detroit, you know, he's one of the top three or four managers in the entire sport now. But general manager, and in this case, actually president of baseball operations, but that lead baseball operations job, which has different titles and different orgs, doesn't really matter which one you use, is like such a broad strategy and, you know, overall organizational vision job. Like, deciding whether or not to give Matt Chapman a no trade clause is like the easiest thing you're ever going to do in that job, right? You know, I know, you know, you've worked in business. Like, can you imagine jumping straight into a CEO job with almost?
This was my example, was someone on the board of directors is unhappy with the CEO. And instead of hiring a new CEO, they go, you know what? I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to jump in and do it.
But it's like not someone who's on the board of directors for like their longtime business operational acumen. It was somebody on the board of directors because they're famous and rich.
Yeah.
You're better positioned to answer. Do you have any idea what Buster Posey's philosophy on modern mid-2020s baseball actually is? Because I really don't. And I watched the press conference. It did not give me a particularly better idea one way or the other. Like
he's not a quote. He doesn't give you anything because that's how he's stayed drama free essentially for his whole career. So I liked your John Lynch analogy earlier or comparison, because the reason why John Lynch, who came out of the television industry, right? It's not like he was doing this prior. The reason why Lynch works is because Kyle is the football guy. Kyle Shanahan is the X's and O's. They both kind of combined for the player personnel stuff. But I'm pretty sure that Kyle is like the last say. Like Kyle has final call or final say in if they disagree on something. Now then in football, they also have Parag Marate, who does all of the financial stuff. So anytime you hear, 49ers are negotiating with a player and it's going bad, it always is Parag Marate. It's not Lynch or Shanahan. So they have like a three-headed monster that runs the 49ers. And here we are hearing that Buster's going to hire somebody who's very qualified as a general manager, which is necessary. And I imagine they're going to have a similar workload, except in this instance, it would be the John Lynch who would have the final say over the real X's and O's or analytically based baseball person. So that's where it seems to be a little bit different. And I will tell you, I've basically, when it happened, I said, okay, I get it, but it is an overcorrection. Because what happened here, with this Farhan Zaidi regime, and we can talk about what you thought about his performance. What happened is Farhan was so deep in the weeds that I'm almost sure that marketing had no idea what to do, because all of the players that he signed were to such short-term deals that you didn't know if this player was going to be here or not in the next year. Now, in that 2021 team, the reason why that was different is because you still had the remnants of Belt and you had the remnants of Crawford, and that was also Posey's last season. So from a Giants history perspective, you still had those guys who were tied to those great teams. But the following year, I think only Crawford was back, and he was a shell of himself. So, Brad and I would have this exercise and we would go, okay, you have a young Giants fan that you need to buy a jersey for. Who is it? Is it Logan Webb? Pitcher jerseys aren't super popular. Is it, I guess, we were kind of proposing Jung-Hoo Lee, but then he got hurt, so he didn't really get to show. But now I guess it is somebody like, Matt Chapman, who's going to be around for a while. But that is where sort of like the in the weeds of baseball ops, and then you also have to sell a team. I don't think that they worked hand in hand necessarily. So I felt like this was an overcorrection, because when Giants fans hear Buster saying stuff like, we're not going to do as much of this fringe stuff that Farhan did, where he's constantly roaming the waiver wire to try and, eke out a half a win here and there on stuff. And Buster's kind of saying like, we're going to not do as much of this kind of stuff. And you'll love this one, because, talk about anti-analytics in the Bay Area. Will Clark, of all people, he was talking about him and Eric Burns. They have a podcast, and Will was saying that, he doesn't have an issue. He's not going to bury Farhan or anything, but he was saying that Melvin would kind of roll out a lineup and then Farhan would say, okay, we're going to switch this and this and this. And so Farhan would have like last say on the lineup piece, which is kind of interesting. I mean, I assumed that they all kind of worked hand in hand on that stuff, and you're kind of working with the data. And Melvin, what do you think about this guy? How's this guy feeling? Well, Lamont Wade, you know, in the first five innings, hits great off of this guy who's probably only going to go twice through the lineup. So let's play Lamont Wade. So I just assumed that they kind of worked in tandem. But Will was saying that Farhan was overruling some of Melvin's instincts on that stuff, which I found pretty interesting. I don't know if that's true or not. I'm sure Will's clued into some of it. Yeah. But it just seems like this move was very much made in mind with, we have distanced ourselves from the relationship that this team has with the fan base. Now, how do we move that closer to the middle? There could have been like a happy medium that was there, and they decided to go all the way in on the other side.
So there's kind of like a, I don't know if Zaidi was implementing analytics particularly well, especially in the last year or two. You know, when he kind of initially came in, I think he had some really interesting ideas, and I think in certain ways they cracked like certain types of hitting codes. But the pace of this stuff in baseball just has been so fast that what worked in terms of analytics and research and development and player development 3, 4, 5 years ago doesn't necessarily work today, or at least it isn't the cutting edge anymore. And also, I think there's like, look, why are you hiring Bob Melvin, who is a pretty analytics capable manager himself, but is also a manager that you specifically bring in because of his acumen, it in-game moves, and the respect that he commands from his players, especially. He's beloved among his players and always has been. Like, why are you bringing him in and then trying to dictate a lineup as a potentially lame duck baseball operations hit? Look, the Farhan wasn't going to make it through the season unless he made the playoffs. Rumors have been out there for 4, 5, 6 months.
Like, we thought the same thing could happen last year.
Right. Yeah. This was a non-surprising move, Farhan being let go.
Yes.
Buster Posey being named president of baseball operations was a super surprising move. Farhan being let go was not a surprising move, right? So, like, if you're, like, making – and I assume he himself had to know that that was a possibility. He, you know, these guys all read the same stuff we do and talk to the same people we do. He's not an idiot. He's a very smart guy. Yeah, so you're going to bring in Bob Melvin, and then you're going to get in fights with Bob Melvin about the lineup. Like, I don't. That kind of sums up a lot of the problems that he had here, which is that he had a lot of these really good ideas, but the implementation of them was maybe a little suspect, and he was not able to smooth around the edges. Like, you look at your top baseball ops heads within this kind of sphere, Andrew Friedman, David Stearns, those are the two names you're going to get as like the two big, Eric Neander with Tampa Bay. Those are names you're going to get as the top baseball ops heads with like an analytics research and development type bit. And the common thread you'll hear, especially with Stearns and Friedman, is how good they are at dealing with people and being able to get people to do things that maybe they're not initially inclined to do without saying, you do that. You know, the whole thing where you make the person doing it think it's their idea or convince them to your
right
point, as opposed to just going, yeah, put Lamonte Wade in the lineup today, right? Like, because that's a lot more difficult than trying to get Bob Melvin on your side as to why Wade should be in the lineup.
Right.
And that's something that I don't think that the Giants have excelled at as much. They've looked at a lot of periods, especially in the last 18 to 24 months, at like an organization where just like everybody's pulling in different directions. Like, one person's pulling here, one person's pulling here, one person's pulling here. Like, an organization that didn't have a coherent plan in a lot of ways. And that absolutely falls on the guy running baseball operations,
because
that's his job. But again, what's Buster Posey's coherent plan? And my concern with bringing in a really good general manager under Buster Posey, if you're a candidate who is rising in the baseball field, you're a hot baseball executive name that's maybe a number three or a number four somewhere else, an assistant general manager, a scouting director, vice president somewhere else. You're coming in and taking a job as a number two where you're going to have to do an unusually large amount of the work. You're going to be under the living franchise legend who owns a piece of the team and has no experience. You're basically being set up to fail, right?
Like, you're definitely the fall guy. If
right, exactly. Well.
Yeah.
So are you going to be able to attract, like, a top... Is Kim Ng going to take this job? That's a name that people have been bantering around.
Yeah, her name came up immediately. Yeah.
I have no inside information about that. But the entire reason she just left the Marlins 11 months ago was because they wanted to make her the number two. And she thought based on her resume and the work she had done over the couple of years in Miami, that she shouldn't be demoted. So now you're putting her in a position where she's going to be taking a job as a number two under somebody that she is far more qualified to be the number one. Right. So you start looking at maybe instead of somebody who's like really, really qualified, you're going to get maybe an older person who's willing to fill into an more advisory type role. I know Brian Sabian's name has been bandied about for that, which
I mean, it's you bring up Sabian, which I was going to bring up too. It sounds like Posey is definitely using Sabian and guys like Dusty Baker as advisors into what he may want to do. And just those two names alone, you see where the lean is at, right? Like that is not an analytical lean. Now, the Giants do have people who've been in their front office for a long time. There's a guy, Jeremy Shelley. He's been with the team since like the early 90s from when he was like an intern. And so he's been in the organization, and he is not a sexy name. Mm-hmm. He may be willing to do the work that you just said because it is an opportunity, and he would be an easy fall guy for Buster in a sense. But at the same time, is that going to excite the fan base? Not really, but maybe they're just excited because Buster's back. It would be hilarious, by the way, somehow Brian Sabian is back in the front office, and then we get Ned Coletti back. We get Bobby Evans back.
I heard Bobby Evans was a name. I heard bandied about too for this.
Get the band back together, man, just to prop up Buster here.
Hey, football fans. BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers. And they can help you get your confidence back, too, with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride, prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So okay, so one thing before, and then I'll let you go, or I'll let you talk. But so this idea that you're bringing in a solid person behind him, I completely agree with you, by the way, on who's going to want to take that job. I wonder if the selling point is Buster's really only going to be here for 3 years, and then he's going to move back into some sort of thing, and they just kind of want to reset some of the things that maybe they feel got away from them during the Zaidi. Because like you said, the pulling of things going in different directions, the onus does fall on him. We saw Kapler come in, and he was hand chosen, and when Kapler, that 2021 season, he was doing things kind of unconventionally, but you kind of believed in it because you're like, okay, X player, if he's bought in to Zaidi, then maybe that means something. But then when they couldn't figure it out in the next year, almost, I guess, a year and a half, 2 years, then you were just like, huh, maybe Zaidi had him specifically because he could kind of overrule him on things, and Kapler was willing just to go along with it. But when you look at kind of the history of the Giants when they were winning, they were very kind of like, band of misfits. Like, you had Bumgarner blowing snot rockets and yelling at umpires and like just very sort of machismo. And you had like these wacky guys like Wilson and Lincecum. And the 2021 team and the way they won was a 180 from before. And so Buster played on both, and you kind of wonder what, I imagine he probably enjoyed, the Bochy style more than the Kapler style.
I would think so, but I there are not a lot of teams who have, over the last, say, 10 to 12 years, actively turned away from a more analytic style bent. The Astros have done it over the last couple of years, and I don't know that it's really went that well for them. They're still kind of trading on the successes of when Lou Now and then James Click were running the show a little bit. And I just, like, you can do it. Like, the Royals are playing right now. The Royals are a team that's very heavy on traditional scouting. They want eyes on the ground, a lot of gut feel process, non-process-oriented type stuff. And they're in the playoffs, and they've built a nice major league team, and they've built a nice farm system. But even at that, their manager is Matt Quatrero, who they hired from the Rays. Like, it's not right. Like they're completely averse to being it to, like, you know, paying attention to, like, modern athletic trends either. And also, they drafted Bobby Witt Jr. number 2 overall, and Bobby Witt Jr. is one of the 5 best players in baseball now.
Yeah, yeah.
That was not a particularly hard draft and player development situation there. You know, that guy's one of the better prep hitting prospects of recent memory, and he turned into, you know, we ranked him over Adley Rutschman and Julio Rodriguez as the top prospect in baseball that year when the three of them were real close. Like, he's an incredible player, and the Giants have never been bad enough or won the lottery enough to get one of those types of players. And I also, like, I have no idea at this point what the Giants player development philosophy has been for the last couple of years.
This is going to be my next question for you.
Yeah, it's like, it's all over the place. Like, they don't particularly excel at developing anything. Their acquisition tendencies are just like, they take a lot of, like, big guys who hit the baseball hard, which I'm all for, but if you're going to do that, you have to have really good hit tool and pitch recognition type development. They really haven't had that. And, like, on the pitching side, they tend to be really amenable to, like, injury risk and, you know, missed time and stuff like that doesn't seem to bother them, but they haven't particularly excelled at keeping those guys healthy or getting them the type of pitches that they need to do.
Yeah, so, like, all of a sudden, Reggie Crawford's, like, out again, like, at some
right.
major
yeah,
surgery.
He just had a labrum surgery, I think, right? Yeah, so, yeah, and, like, you know, Kyle Harrison's cool, but Kyle Harrison's kind of, like, stagnated and looks like he's going to be, like, a mid-rotation starter, which is nice. Like, if you go back to where he was drafted, that's a nice development story. But if you also go back 2 years ago, the guy was one of the top pitching prospects in baseball, and now he just looks like he's going to be decent. And, you know, maybe he'll take another step. It's not. But, you know, over the last 2 years, he really hasn't taken much of a step forward. You look at, you know, just Marco Luciano is a guy that I've really liked in the past at certain points, but, like, he's been up and down in the majors the last couple of years, and he's been at AAA the last couple. I have no idea what this guy is at this point. Like, I don't know whether he can play a credible shortstop long term.
Don't you think you do know? If you were to bet, you would say that he is not a major league
shortstop, right? If I was going to bet, I would have been betting against it since he was 17. But,
okay,
like,
so here's a question. So I don't know. Like, I don't know how the communities kind of interact, but Keith Law wrote something like 3 years ago, and he was like, they should move him either to a corner infield position or to the outfield now, because he's not going to be able to play shortstop. And so they didn't do that. And now what the news that came out at the very end of the year, the Giants are out of the playoff race. And a lot of us were like, okay, they're not going to make the playoffs. Now maybe they'll play this kid and just let him have as many at-bats as possible. And then they go, well, we're going to send him down to Arizona because he needs to learn a new position. And I was like, we couldn't wait a week to do that? Like, why do we have to do it now? Can we give him some ABs? And it's like, so they decided that now? That thing really bothered me.
Here's the problem with moving him off of shortstop. If you make Marcio Luciano a right fielder, what is your level of confidence that he's ever going to hit enough to be a first division right fielder, right? Like, it's one of those profiles where if he stays at short, which was maybe, for me, he was always in the maybe, probably not bucket, which is like, maybe he'll gain the defensive role. This is a reliability problem with him, right? Like, he has the athletic, he's a big kid, but he theoretically has the athletic tools to play the position. He's just not reliable enough. So you're hoping he grows into that while also not physically growing off of the position. It looks like that's not going to happen. Maybe he sticks at second base now. I know that's kind of the theoretical next stop for him.
I'm trying to think of, like, big and tall second baseman. I guess like Ryan Sandberg is like the prototype of your tall 6 foot two second baseman.
So it's become like historically you've never played a second baseman like that there, yeah. Right? Like, but it's becoming a like trendier thing to do at least part time. Under the idea that you can hide the player a little bit better at second base than even at third base, especially if he doesn't have the greatest throwing reliability, which again, Luciano, we're talking yeah. reliability problems more than that. The throws, the throws are shorter, so there's less ability to airmail it into the dugout. But again, like you start looking at this, and you know, you stick him at right field and first base. Is he really going to be an impactful offensive player there? Now, 2 or 3 years ago, when that suggestion, it sounds like, was made, the answer was a little more positive in that direction. There's also interaction here, too. Like, you know, if you moved him off earlier and he didn't have the defensive demands of trying to learn and stay at middle infield positions, maybe his bat takes more of a jump. That's always something I've personally been a little bit of a believer in, that players...
Do you think his... I think his trade value was going to be higher as a shortstop.
Yes, yes.
But if you really dug into watching him play shortstop, everyone had to have had the same conclusion, which is he's probably not going to stay there.
But there are guys where they're, you know, Ellie De La Cruz at a similar point in his development, who is a player who's obviously turned out massively differently and at one point was a fairly similarly rated prospect, and kind of broadly the same skill set too, like very broadly. You know, he was a guy that pretty much everybody thought wasn't going to stick in shortstop, and now he's a really good shortstop. You're trying to project, you know, 19, 20, 21-year-olds in a way where you have to project the physical development, but you also have to project just, like, the skill development.
Yeah.
I mentioned J-Rod earlier. Julio Rodriguez, when he was in the lower minors, when he was 18, 19 years old, was a fringe average, slightly below average runner who was mostly playing corner outfield spots. He's now one of the fastest players in the league and an excellent defensive center fielder. Like sometimes these guys just develop in ways that you're not totally expecting. So mm-hmm. when you see a guy who has some shortstop or middle infield traits, you're going to want to give it as long of a chance as possible. Both because if he becomes a high-end offensive performer, which at the time you were hoping Luciano would be, that hope's kind of faded a little bit. It's still latently there. He does hit the ball really hard sometimes. So that core ability that he's always had does still exist. You know, one, you've got a chance for a real superstar if everything turns out. But two, if his offense did stagnate to this level while he was still able to play shortstop, you'd still have a viable starting shortstop, whereas if he's a right fielder, he's not a major leaguer at the level of offensive performance he's currently projecting at. So he's kind of got caught in the middle where he's not really good enough at anything quite yet.
And to go back to Farhan for a second, the thing that I think, you know, the fan base lost faith in him over the last couple of years, it wasn't all of a sudden. They were starting to lose faith because he would say certain things. And, you know, I always used to say this to young parents when I was a younger parent. I would say, you know, anything you say out of your mouth, a kid is going to think is a promise, even if you don't use the word "I promise," right? So Farhan would say things like, "Well, we're going to trade Soler because we really want to open up the opportunity for Luciano to just play hit every day. He's going to DH and this and that." And then he wouldn't play at all. And you're like, so who's are you? Did you lie? Did the plan change? It just didn't seem like he had that control. And so he lost faith for not really having a plan or control or by living up to his word or whatever it was. And it felt like they were kind of playing with this kid who was their top prospect not that long ago. And you're just watching the value of Luciano just drop daily. And it was almost like not even really his fault because he couldn't even get on the field.
Yeah. I mean, so I think to kind of, you know, sum up the Zaidi experience here from at least my kind of broader view outside perspective. To me, this looks like a guy who basically got Peter principled, right? Like, he's a really great number two in a front office because he has certain great ideas. But as
watch him go back to the Dodgers, and Giants fans will be really happy about that one.
Right. He could end up, the Mets are probably going to hire a GM, and it wouldn't shock me if either Zaidi or Pete Pitaia came up for that position. Pitaia, I think, would actually be more likely than Zaidi because he has connections to David Stearns. But yeah, like, he had done some really good things with the Athletics and with the Dodgers in a number two capacity. But when you put him up top, I'm going to use a wrestling analogy here. Like, this is the Vince Russo thing, right? Mm-hmm. When he's the number two and he has a filter above him where all of his bad ideas don't get to the top, it can be really effective.
Right.
Then you have WCW in 1999, right? Yeah. So, like, it's, you know, that happens pretty much everywhere in every business. And
totally. Know,
people get promoted one level past their level of competency because they're really competent at a certain job. And then they take the next step up and they don't have the skills for that. It's
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. That does make a lot of sense. And here, Davis, who's checking in with us, this is something that, it's just not going to happen here because they can't afford to have less attendance than they do. The idea of tanking San Francisco as a city is just not going to support a team that is actively tanking. They just won't show up.
Also, you can't do it anymore because, one, there's a draft lottery, and two, if you are, depending on whether you're a revenue sharing payer or not, you cannot get a top draft pick in either consecutive years or 2 years out of 3 years anymore. Once you get those top picks, you're barred from getting them again immediately. The White Sox cannot get a lottery pick this year after the worst season in MLB history. Like, that, you know, that. So the ability to just say we're going to, like what the Orioles did, we're going to be really bad for a while and we're going to rack top draft picks and we're going to get Adley Rutschman and Jackson Holliday out of it, plus all the guys that they got with the extra bonus pool money, like Gunnar Henderson and Kobe Mayo, were guys that they got with those bonus savings that they got from tanking out. Usually you can't do it anymore. It's just not as effective. Because as an aesthetic thing and as a quality of competition thing, Major League Baseball and the Players Association both didn't want teams doing that anymore. So that's not – and yeah, I mean, maybe they should have, but, you know, this was a team that won a lot of games a couple of years ago. Like, this was not a moribund, unable to compete organization. They just, you know, they peaked very quickly and didn't do the things they needed to do to sustain it. You know, coming into this season, I believe we even talked about it. I thought they had a chance to contend this season, especially after they signed Snell and Chapman late, which I thought were very shrewd signings in the sense that they signed them, and it just didn't work out.
Brad and I are generally optimistic about the team. Yeah. And, you know, whenever you're optimistic about the team, you're sort of looking at it from the perspective of if things align the way that they think it's going to align. And the thing that we kind of did it with a little bit of a safety net in that they bet so much on the second half this year with the Robbie Ray trade and Alex Cobb being on the DL. And then Alex Cobb doesn't even pitch for them at all because he gets traded before he's ready to come back. But they sunk like this idea that, hey, we just need to stay competitive in this first half. And then the second half, we'll have all the pieces together and we'll go on a run. I think they were three games out of the third wild card at the break. So they did okay there. But then what happens is your center fielder is lost for the year. And so we're back to, you know, Yastrzemski playing a lot. And, you know, I think he's like so much more valuable as like a fourth outfielder than as a starter. And he's a good player, but he's just not the guy who's going to, you know, play right field and hit 30 bombs for you. Yeah. And so, yeah, there was always a caveat. I think it was like, if this thing goes correctly, yeah, they can compete. And then you had that little safety net for the second half this year. Now, you know, Blake Snell did his job in that second half of the season. He was untouchable. We haven't seen a guy like that since Lincecum to have that dominant of a second half. But then at the end of the season, you know, he could have came out and threw three innings and tipped his cap and walked out and was like, nope, I'm not pitching. This doesn't mean anything. That's like, okay, I get it. You're going back into that free agent market, but you know, there was a fan base that wanted to give you this send off. They wanted to cheer their ass off for you because you were going to make that start. And when you didn't, then that, you know, this fan base looks at that kind of thing a little differently, I think, than others would. So, you know, you got that too. And that doesn't bode well. He's not coming back anyway, but especially not now because of the relationship with Boris and Zaidi made it possible, maybe not probable, but possible. That's not happening now. But at the same time, we're optimistic, but you could sort of see as the season goes on, like, okay, everything is not falling into place. And thus, you know, we're probably closer to 500 than anything. I said all year long, I was like, until they are over 500, they're an average team. And they just never got above, like, they maybe spent a handful of days above 500 all season long.
Yeah. Snell in particular, I think, has just been so jaded by the business aspects of baseball that he just kind of, you know, that doesn't mean anything to him anymore, is my guess. And yeah, you know, I understand, you know, you go back to the 2020 World Series when he got yanked in that spot and then, you know, he got moved around and they didn't get a contract this offseason. You know, I think it's just kind of, you know, understandably so, after the last 4 years of his career. But it does suck for the fans in that circumstance. I would say that, you know, I do think, look, the Giants have been trying to give top players a lot of money for a long time and not been as successful at it as they would have hoped. But, you know, a team that has a really active, high-spending ownership group and is less heavily involved in the analytics side is the exact type of team Boris tries to target to place his free agents with. So I wouldn't be shocked if they stole or one of the top Boris target teams. Does that mean they're getting Juan Soto? Look, I mean, I think Juan Soto is staying in New York. Now, I'm saying staying in New York.
I would be shocked if he leaves that market.
I don't know which team in New York he's staying with, but I'm pretty sure he's staying in New York. Yeah, I think, look, the Yankees and the Mets are both going to offer him exceedingly huge amounts of money and probably considerably more than anybody else is going to, if you hear the rumblings out. But, you know, could the Giants get involved in that? Yeah, they could. I mean, they did offer Ohtani $700 million, so there's no reason they can't offer Soto $700 million if they want to. You know, could they re-sign Snell? Yeah, they could. Based on where they are in their contention cycle, I'm not sure signing a Blake Snell entering his 30s, where maybe he's going to start being a little more of the first half of this year, Blake Snell, and a little less of the second half, is particularly wise. Kind of the same thing with Corbin Burnes. Like, those would be statement signings, but I'm not sure. The Giants are kind of caught in between here, right? Because they were an 81 team this year. And if you look at their underlying numbers, they were an 81 team. It's not like
they were not the definition of average.
Yeah. They were not a 72 win team that got super lucky. They were not a 91 team that got super unlucky. They were a 500 team. They have an average-ish farm, below average, not really, you know, I really like Bryce Eldridge. It's not a lot of, like, obvious impact guys beyond that. And for all I love Bryce Eldridge, he's probably a first baseman. He's a first baseman now. I think he's got a shot to play the outfield at some point, but he's not you know, where he's not an up the middle guy. And there's just like, there's not like James Tibbs was a guy that I liked in the draft. He was kind of terrible after the draft. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes that's a harbinger of less good things coming in the future. And it's kind of hard to delineate that in the exact moment, because you're dealing with like 25 game sample sizes where
he hit at San Jose immediately, and then they threw him up to the higher A level, and he did not hit at all. It was it was a shock to the system.
And those guys have been playing competitive baseball since February, so a lot of times they're just gassed by the time they get into the, like, he Charlie Condon, who was the number three pick and went to the Rockies, went into the minors and was like so catastrophically bad and just like looked like he didn't know what he was swinging at that we're being forced to reevaluate our previous reports on him. Tibbs didn't really do that. He was just kind of generically not great, especially after he got pushed up. But then because they signed Snell and Chapman, they didn't have second and third round picks. And they decided to basically spend the rest of their draft pool on Dakota Jordan, who is also a player I like in certain aspects, but a guy who just has tremendous amounts of swing and miss in his game. Mm-hmm. Super athletic. If this all works out, maybe you've got like an actual star outfielder, but a pretty low chance of working out compared to, you know, who you might have been able to get in the second round. And again, if you don't have a second or third round pick, you're just not going to be able to get like a high upside guy like Jordan that doesn't have super discernible faults. They didn't really have like huge breakout guys in their minors, like that broke out to like a top 100 type level, at least, you know, super intensive ones. So it's like, it's an average farm. So like, the idea of waiting for the farm guys to come, I don't know if they've got enough impact guys for that to be a super viable strategy. Getting back to what you know, the question about should they tank, like what goal in mind do you have in tanking? Like, where, if you're gonna say you're tanking, okay, do you have players on your roster that you're going to be able to get big trade returns for? Logan Webb, yeah, you're going to get a big trade return for Logan Webb. You're probably going to get a big trade for Elio Ramos at this point, too, right? Who is the one guy in terms of a young player who's really broken out over the last year, basically. He was a guy that coming into the season, his stock had went down from being a top 100 prospect. They had a really nice season where he showed a lot of the things that he hadn't shown for the last couple of years, which is a hopeful point for Luciano too, because that does have that post-type thing does happen. Mark Vientos on the Mets was nowhere near as good of a prospect as Luciano, but was a pretty good prospect who spent a lot of the 2022 and 2023 seasons just struggling to hit the ball in the major leagues, to the point that the Mets signed J.D. Martinez, which the Giants were trying to do, but he didn't want to play in the park. And that sent Vientos into a spot where he got sent down again to begin the season. He got a chance when Brett Beatty, who was a higher-ranked prospect, failed for another time. He comes up, and since he came back up for good around the end of May, he was like a top-10 hitter in the National League, and looks like he's just made a bunch of really unexpected developments and in individual skills. You know, we're trying to predict non-linear development paths for kids in their late teens, early to mid 20s. You're going to get some variance there, but a lot of the positive variance is based on having really good player development processes in place. And the Giants don't seem to have that right now. Can they get there? Yeah. Is Posey potentially, you know, for all I know, Buster Posey has incredible ideas about player development that,
or just great relationships to bring in the right
hire people. The right guys. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Wow. What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Buster Posey, in the president of baseball operations role, should not be the one out there in spring training working with your young catchers
right.
to develop better defensively. He's the guy that has to hire the guy to work with your young catchers to be out there in spring training defensively.
Right.
And for all I know, he has great ideas about that. We just have no evidence of it in any particular direction. So, yeah, the biggest task for him, I think, coming in is to just set a direction for the franchise, because any direction is better than the non-directions they've had over the last couple of years.
All right, let's spend the last 10 minutes talking about the current postseason. As of this recording, three out of the four divisional series are split at one, and the Yankees and the Royals are playing right now. Yankees are up 1-0 on the Royals.
The Royals just took the lead. The Royals are now up 2-1.
I did see that. When it comes to the postseason, I thought the wild card round was fun, but we only saw one series actually go to a third game.
Yes. The Mets were the only game last Thursday, and then had one of the wildest elimination games in baseball history.
Yeah, it's nuts.
4 days after they'd had a previously wild game, or 3 days, not even four. But then since that, like, the Diaz series has just been awesome so far.
I'm getting a lot. I can sort of sense that, you know, football season's here. Oh, you know, my baseball team is not in the playoffs, and thus I am not paying attention. You get a lot of that sometimes, but I think they do have an opportunity with two New York teams involved. The Dodgers themselves are involved, and you have some really plucky teams as well. I think. You know, you're basically asking for a lottery ticket to hit for all of these things to happen, and for, you know, the Yankees and the Dodgers, you know, people say, oh, that's what they want. I don't like the Dodgers at all. I root for them to lose every single game that they play on the field. But at the same time, I am just mesmerized by Ohtani, right? That was the worst landing spot for him. For all I cared, he could have ended up at any other place except for the Giants, and I would have been happy. But because he ended up in the Dodgers, I kind of have to root for him to lose. But I'm just so mesmerized by watching him hit a baseball. The Padres, they were the best second half team in the league themselves, and they play the Dodgers really well. They're having a very competitive series. Yesterday's game was marred by unruly fans and Profar kind of getting into it. What do you like? You are a baseball fan first and foremost. You are also in the community of writing for Baseball Prospectus. At the same time, your heart bleeds you know, blue and orange with the Mets. Like, how do you see this playoffs so far? And do you like where we're going with kind of the, I'm trying to figure out what the right, whenever you have short series is, there's going to be more variance, and the underdogs can definitely win. You see the Orioles, you know, at their house, they got swept. The Tigers made it, and they lost 100 games last year. So it's just that I like those stories. Those stories are cool. But at the same time, you go out there and you win 95 games or 100 games, and you're like, oh, two games and I'm done. I'm sitting at home with everyone else.
So they've created a system where there still is the incentive to win 95 or 100 games because you don't have to play in that three-game Thunderdome style
right. Wild
card round unless you're the 2022 Mets who won 101 games, went to that round and lost, which...
Giants won 107 games and lost to the Dodgers.
Yeah, that's another one. Yeah.
That was insane.
But I would like to see them make the division series seven games to give even more of an incentive. If you win your division and you are one of the top two teams in your league, the worst you're going to get is a seven-game series. You're going to have an opportunity to play it out. But in general, I think this double-tiered system where you have the big advantage to the top two teams in the league incentivizes teams to be truly great. And then the next level down, you have, and you've seen this play out at the last couple trade deadlines, pretty much everybody is going for it. You've only seen 6, 8, 9 teams hard selling at the deadline because even if you're in a situation where you're 500, you're probably only 3 or 4 games out of a playoff spot, and you have hope. Coming into the season, there were 24, 25 teams that were like actively giving themselves a chance to advance this season. And you could argue the Tigers weren't even one of them, and they actually made it.
And they were trading people at the deadline.
Yeah, they sold at the deadline and still made it. Now, they soft sold. They sold Jack Flaherty. They sold, which was a guy that they probably signed specifically to flip at the deadline for prospects. Yeah.
Canna
they sold,
to the
they
Giants.
Sold Cannon, Andrew Chafin, who are just kind of filler guys. They didn't sell Tarik Skubal, and they certainly talked about it. And in the Flaherty trade, they got back Trey Sweeney, who's been their starting shortstop during this playoff run. So it's not like they didn't get guys back.
Yeah,
in
that worked
deals.
Out.
Yeah. So like not that Trey Sweeney is particularly good, but they just needed somebody to stand there, catch balls, and not strike out 41% of the time like Javi Baez was doing.
Yeah, exactly.
So that may not be the exact number. Please don't yell.
It's probably not that far off.
Yeah, it was bad. But I really like this, and it creates this incredible excitement in these kind of short series where anything can happen. Now, is this a serious attempt to figure out who the best baseball team is? No, it's not.
That's the thing, and it. March Madness got away with this for a long time until college basketball. The women's game is actually back. The women's college basketball game is really hot. But the men's game has kind of faltered because of all these one-and-done players. But that's what they were selling so much in the NCAAs was like, you have this possibility of these upsets. But then sometimes when you get to the Elite Eight or when you get to the Final Four or when you get to the championship game, you're not as invested because those teams that you were rooting for to get there, they get there and you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't think they were going to actually get there. And I think there are enough really good teams in baseball this year where we're going to have a pretty darn good World Series. But that is also the risk at the same time. Like if the Royals made it to the World Series, great. You get to see Bobby Witt on the biggest stage, of baseball. So be it. Like even if they don't win, like you get to see that. And so you're propping up somebody like him. But let's say the Tigers get it. Skubal's only going to throw twice. And then you're like, okay, who are all these other guys? So that's the flip side of that.
We think about this a lot. Like last year's World Series was the Diamondbacks and Rangers, which again was a series of a lot of who is this guy? Why are these teams here? They were, the Rangers who won the World Series last year basically backed in. Like they backed into the playoffs. Everybody thought they were dead in the water, and then they won the World Series.
Like to me, the story of the last two World Series were really about the managers more so than even the players.
Yeah, Dusty, and that was a big deal. That's not going to happen this year, just because we know the four teams that are left in the National League, that's not going to happen with right. the teams that are left in the National League. You've got the Dodgers who have Ohtani. You've got the Padres who have Tatis and Luis Arias and, you know, all those guys. You've got the Mets who are this great story, big market New York team that's got Francisco Lindor and Pete Alonso. And you've got the Phillies, who have been kind of the big postseason team of the last several years, but still haven't won the World Series yet. Like Bryce Harper, Nick Castellanos, yeah. Trey Turner. So you've got you've got big market star team coming out of the NL. It's guaranteed. There's no team that doesn't fit into that. The AL, you've got the Yankees, and then you've got all of these AL Central teams, I am 100% sure that the television executives, that the media people really want, like Yankees Dodgers or Yankees Mets, right? Yeah, or Yankees sure. Phillies.
For sure.
Yankees Padres would be fine too.
All of the NL yeah. teams would be fine. I'm sure your stack ranking,
right?
You know, probably one and two Dodgers and Mets over yeah. Maybe Dodgers, Phillies, and Mets are kind of tied there. But
yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's like the Yankees or bust in the American League for that kind of stuff.
Otherwise you're just at that point, the Guardians are the best team of the AL Central teams, but I think the Royals are probably the best story, and Witt is by far the biggest star out of those three teams.
He's probably finishing second in MVP, right?
I think so, yeah. I think it's going to be Judge, Gunner, and Judge, Witt, Gunner in that order would mm-hmm. be my guess. You know, some of the down-ballot stuff can get weird, but yeah, I mean, you can make – look, he's not going to win it. Judge had a borderline historic offensive season in his own way, not in the counting stat ways that Ohtani did. He's not going to win it, but you can make an argument that he was the best player in the AL this
yeah.
year, overall player, because of his defense and base running. And you know, just a budding superstar. But at the same time, it's the Royals. Like, you know, it's the Kansas City market. And Cole Reagans is probably the third best pitcher left in this playoff, but nobody has any idea who he is.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's a guy that came out of nowhere last summer, basically. You know, even compared to, like, Tarik Skubal, you know, nobody knows who Cole Reagans is. Tarik Skubal won the Triple Crown of pitching is going to be the unanimous Cy Young, presumably. So, it's a lot of fun. The postseason's been incredible so far in terms of the quality of games and the drama, and you just hope it carries all the way through, basically.
So, as we wind down here, I know you probably can't make a prediction because of in the National League because of who your heart, but like. Before the playoffs even started, did you have a lean towards what you thought we were going to see come the World Series?
Dodgers Yankees was like the easy one, just because if you kind of look at where the teams lined up, you know, the Yankees were. The Yankees, it pains me to say, but the Yankees probably are the best team in the American League, and they're generally pretty well suited for the October style of baseball. Plus, I don't know, Ohtani was just like so high. I know this is non-sabermetric of me. Ohtani's been so good for the last month, including even in game one of this series, that it's just like, God, like that's what you want. Putting aside my fan interest, what you want to see is this guy finally excelling on the biggest stage.
Yeah, that was like Bonds in 2002.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Where, you know, and Bonds, he had played in the, you know, the Pittsburgh had been in the playoffs in 93, and he had been in the playoffs previously.
In a bad series. He has that throw that he can't throw Sid Bream out at the plate.
Yes. Imagine having that be your last experience with your friend. Just like, the legacy of Barry Bonds is too complicated a topic for the 90 seconds before you're going to want to wrap up. So, but anyway, like, you really just want to see, like, Ohtani just, like, have a chance to do, like, some really special stuff in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely.
What I know as Giants fans, you're not going to, and as a Mets fan, I don't want, because that necessarily means my team's going to get eliminated at some point.
You know, the thing about the Dodgers, and I have a buddy who I'll chime back and forth with him every once in a while about it, but I also read up on the Dodgers because you kind of have to pay attention to what they're doing if you're in the same division that they are in. And throughout the season, like, you know, every team has their boogeyman about, oh, you know, this always happens or this always happens. And everybody on the Dodgers side was like, we're just not going to have starting pitching again. I don't care. All the people that we've brought in, Glasnow, I don't care. Walker Buehler's. We're just not going to have enough starting pitching by the end of the season and in the playoffs. And that's where we're at with them right now. You know, Flaherty, you talked about Flaherty, Yamamoto, and then you can't even bring Yamamoto back on a normal rest because he needs that extra day. And then I guess we're going to get Buehler. Clayton Kershaw's not even available right now. So that is a mess for them. And man, I do not envy, I don't envy Roberts right now. That's for sure.
They're going to throw Landon Knack, and I really like Landon Knack's pitch shapes. Like, I think Landon Knack is a viable major league starter. But also, you're the Los Angeles Dodgers, and you're throwing Landon Knack in the division. Division
and he's going to pitch four innings, and they're going to get him out of there because they don't want him to go through the rotation another time.
They, you know, the Dodgers are so great at developing pitching and adding velocity and finding these guys out of nowhere. But when you're finding guys out of nowhere and adding velocity, you're going to have injuries that come out of that.
These guys are blowing their arms out like crazy.
It's, you know, but throwing – look, Tony Gonsolin is an example of this. Tony Gonsolin was a guy that they signed for, like, I think $2,500 in the ninth round senior sign. And he was mostly an outfielder at a small California college. And they converted him into a pitcher, and he get a full-time pitcher. He had been, like, moonlighting as, like, a relief pitcher and closer in college and had pitched some in collegiate summer leagues. And they converted him full-time to a starting pitcher. He's added, like, 7 miles an hour since that happened. And instead of working a day job, he's now a Major League Baseball player because the Tony Gonsolin that got drafted would have gotten cut 18 months after he was drafted and would be working as, you know, a high school teacher or whatever. And he's going to make a lot of money. And he's also had some injury problems, but you're going to take that trade off, both if you're Tony Gonsolin and the Dodgers, in exchange for having a viable major league career. And they're doing that with a lot of guys. And that's, you know, other teams that are really good at this type of pitching development also tend to suffer injuries because the human elbow and shoulder is not actually meant to throw a baseball 98 miles an hour. It's just not.
Yeah, I was like reading some stuff and listening to some stuff about stretching out the shoulder. And I actually experienced this because I played baseball, semi-pro baseball, until I was like 29. And I think I was in my mid-20s. And I hurt my elbow a little bit. And so my throwing motion, I was really protecting my elbow. And one of the ways I was protecting my elbow was I was just reaching back with my shoulder. And so then the elbow felt better, but I still had this flexibility in my shoulder. And all of a sudden I was throwing like 5 miles an hour harder. And I was like, how's this happen? Like, how does this happen? And I went to the doctor and he basically said, well, you know, a normal shoulder kind of just rubs like this and yours now rubs like this. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. So it's not actually healthy. It's going to start hurting, but it's way more flexible and I can actually reach back further. Got it. And yeah, it hurts like hell now. Like my right shoulder just is in terrible shape, but for that year and a half, you know, I was probably throwing in the, you know, the low to mid 80s for that short period of time. But like, so, and I'm reading that this is a natural thing that these pitchers are doing, which is being able to stretch out that shoulder for reach back. And then I go into my brain and go, oh my God, they're going to hurt themselves. And it seems like a lot of the injuries are more blown out elbows than anything else, but it just doesn't seem like it's a long-term proposition for healthy guys.
It's so the pitchers talk about this, you know, especially some of the guys that have Robert Stock, who was a major leaguer, bounced around for a few years. I think he pitched in the KBO this year. He talks about this type of stuff a lot on Twitter. He's somebody who's who throws very hard, who has thrown very hard for the course of his career. And, you know, he's talked about how his options are to throw 97, 98 and have a professional career and make money for his family, or to throw 92, be a lot healthier and not have a career. Like, those are your options. Like, you know, just, you know.
Everyone wishes they could be Maddux, but no one can really be Maddux. Look,
Greg Maddux, everybody remembers watched Greg Maddux at the end of his career throwing like 84 miles an hour, right?
Pitching for the Padres.
Pitching for the Padres and the Dodgers at the end, and he went back to the Cubs at the very end, too. Greg Maddux, in the early to mid-1990s, when he was the best pitcher in the National League, was throwing above average velocity for the time that he pitched in. Also, he probably had the best command of any pitcher in Major League history.
Oh, yeah.
And he had, you can go back and watch like his old, but if you watch like his early to mid-90s games, like they'll pop up on MLB Network in the offseason. And they just did a really good documentary on him, too. The movement that he was getting, which you weren't recognizing at the time, is the exact type of like carry run movement that we're trying to get out of all of these pitchers now. He was like he's actually the poster child for having this incredible stuff, but everybody remembers him at the end just kind of lobbing the ball up there and trying to pinpoint it. And you know, like he was Jamie Moyer for his entire career, which Jamie Moyer is actually to me the example of this guy that could kind of get. And look, if you have Jamie Moyer's control and Jamie Moyer's changeup and Jamie Moyer's ability to mix his pitches in, you can still do that. You know, Rich Hill's still out there throwing. Yeah. I know it didn't go as well for him this year.
Slop. Like they spell slop.
Right. You can Phil Maton, who's the Mets eighth inning guy, rarely breaks 90 miles an hour, but like he's throwing like this like crazy like demon cutter that's got like crazy amounts of cut and carry, and it's just like this weird fastball, so he can get away with throwing that pitch at 89 miles an hour, and he also has a really great curveball, and he's just like he's just kind of slopping it up there,
or like Taylor Rogers, if you can scrape your knuckles on the ground before you throw a pitch, then
a friend of mine, Tom Hackmer, pitched in the Mexican League this year and is gone off to pitch in the Dominican Winter League. Also throws like that. He throws from a, you know, low sidearm underhand type style, and he's had, you know, he's been able to make a career out of that. But Hack even throws like 93, 94. Like, it's not like he's not like throwing like 86. Like, yeah, he's throwing, you know, he's throwing a lot of mid-90s. You know, Matt Waldron, the major's current only knuckleballer, like still throws his fastball like 93. Like, he can, so like the Dodgers are really good at this, but you know, their guys get hurt, and I think they're also willing to accept a certain level of risk. And you saw that with the Tyler Glasnow trade and extension. Like,
yeah,
you cannot be shocked trading for Tyler Glasnow.
Absolutely,
he was not able to pitch for you in October. That's
I think if you wanted to make a bold prediction saying that Glasnow would not finish the season, it's probably not even that bold of a prediction. Like, that's what, you know, that's what we kind of expected. And it happened. Unfortunate for him, because it's, you know, I'm sure he was heartbroken, but yeah, that was kind of the deal. You know, I would say, though, that, you know, the Giants themselves would go, hey, you know, if we had half of a season of this guy, we'd probably be really happy. But going back to that, though, I guess the one thing that you could say about the way that they handled the young players this season was they came out of it with a couple of guys who were able to pitch some decent innings in their rookie seasons. And if you add Harrison in there, you know, there's a third guy. You had Birdsong, you had Roop coming in at the end, and then you had Harrison, and they all got a good amount of innings. So if you're looking at it from like an experience standpoint, that was a positive that came out of the end of the season, and we'll see how they can go into next year.
Yeah. Birdsong's, I think Birdsong's going to be another guy that's like in like a mid rotation type mix. Like, I think that's, you know, he's got a he's got to walk less guys. And if he, you know, if he can get the walks down far enough, maybe he's even a little more than that. You know, I think mostly the Jordan Hicks experiment worked out. I know it went less well as the season went along, but
talk about another bold prediction you could have made.
Yeah. Look, they got over 100 innings out of him, and they were mostly good.
He was fun to watch, but there were moments where I was like, okay, it's the fifth inning. You're probably not coming out for the six. Can you dial it back? Can you just go just gas it up to strike this guy out instead of throwing the 91 mile per hour sinker?
Look, when they signed him to a 4-year contract to start, I was like, what on earth are you doing? But it kind of worked for the first season. It wasn't a disaster. No, we still got Carson Wisenhunt coming, who I think.
Yeah, that's the one everyone's got their eye on, but yeah. he did not throw well this season in the minors.
You know, he's kind of struggled with injuries and other availability problems, you know, dating back to college at this point. You know, that's a, you know, he's another guy where, like, in the kind of the pitching version of the big risk type profile, but
so much so that he was even on the gut failed for the juice in college.
Yeah. Yeah. I was kind of talking around that one a little bit, but
hey, I'm always going to talk about the guys that fail for taking steroids.
But that is not
something that this franchise does not know about.
No, he struck a lot of guys out in AAA. You would expect him to be able to make 20-25 starts next season and hope that they're decent starts. Like, I think that's a reasonable expectation for him.
Yeah, my worry for going into next season, if the Giants did have Farhan coming back for the last year, you know, how many ever years he has on it, had on his contract left, the idea of, oh, we have this experience in these young pitchers, and thus, you know, maybe we don't have to go get another arm. Or maybe if Robbie Ray doesn't come back and he does opt out, then maybe we just ride these young guys. And I'm just like, I think, again, one of those things where you're like, optimistically, that's kind of a fun idea, but the reality is probably not as good. I still think I would love to see them have a solid number two behind Logan, and then you can kind of, you know, mix in a Harrison and maybe some of these young guys. But, you know, I would be so much more confident if you have two veteran guys leading the rotation and figure out the back end, the back three.
And there's some nice pitchers available in free agency, even beyond, you know, Snell and Burns were the obvious ones. You know, Max Fried would be a really nice fit. Probably also a really nice fit in that park, honestly. Mm-hmm. And he's somebody who, you know, he's going to get nine figures, but it's probably not going to be like over 200. Probably. I can't guarantee that, because left-handed starting pitchers sometimes just get paid way more than they should. Yeah. But you've got, look, I have no idea whether Sean Manaea would come back to the Giants after his experience there last season. It was certainly my impression that he was not super thrilled about being dumped in the bullpen for 4 months.
We liked him.
Yeah.
And he did not really get the fairest of shakes, I don't think.
Yeah. But he's, you know, I think he really broke out with the Mets this year in a way that's likely going to be sustainable moving forward. He might be a nice guy for somebody to sign to a 3 or 4 year deal. Yusei Kikuchi, I think, would be another guy that would be a really good, he's, you know, fit in that park on a 2 or 3 year deal, where he's a guy who can give you some nice innings, but also, you know, you're not going to have to give him 6 or 7 years. Now, you're not giving him 6 or 7 years because he's a little on the older side and has had kind of up and down performances a little bit, but he pitched great for the Astros in the second half this season.
Yeah.
And then never got into the playoffs for them, which was a bit of a curious decision, I think. But, you know, there's some decent starting pitching options. Somebody's going to give Shane Bieber like a make-good contract that the Giants, I think, would be a reasonable team to do that as well.
It depends if he. It depends how many opt outs he has in the previous regime. Then the Giants would have clearly signed him.
Yeah, I'm guessing he's going to sign like a 1-1 kind of contract. Yeah. Would be my guess. And you know, he's probably not going to be ready until like May or June or something.
Perfect.
Like that.
This is exactly what we do. Like, yeah. Well, we'll see. It's what we used to do.
Yeah. I don't know what Buster Posey's philosophy on pitching is. I don't know. If he's gonna, you know, is there a Madison Bumgarner out there? You know, if he's gonna try and recreate Madison Bumgarner, it's probably Corbin Burns. Like that's
interesting. But,
also, you know, Madison Bumgarner, when he signed his big free agent contract, like his career as a good player was over. So
yeah,
maybe you don't want to recreate Madison Bumgarner. Maybe you want Kyle Harrison to be your Madison Bumgarner. He's probably not going to be. But, you know, it's going to be fascinating to see how their philosophy develops. Again, my hope is that they just come up with some philosophy, because even a non-ideal philosophy is better than not having a philosophy
at all.
Which I think is kind of where the Giants have been for the last little bit.
All right. Let people know where to find you and how to find your writing if they want to read you. And then we'll get out of here.
So I write for Baseball Prospectus. We're at baseballprospectus.com. We've been around for like 30 years. I've only been there for like the last 8.5. So
that's still a long time. You've been there for a while.
Very long time. I am like now one of the longest tenured writers in like the history of the site, which is absolutely wild to me because I used to read this site when I was in like high school. And I'm not that young either, to where that was recently. Yeah, so we've got our book coming out in January, February-ish. It usually comes out right before spring training. I'll be doing a bunch of writing in there. I think I'm having an essay or two and work on the top 101 prospects. We're starting up our prospect lists after the World Series. We're going in reverse alphabetical order this year, so the Giants will be pretty quickly up. So those should be popping up in November. I'm not writing the Giants list. I believe Eli Walsh is writing the Giants list. He's one of our more Giants focused writers. I'm pretty sure it's either Eli or Mark, but I think it's Eli. That'll be it. Bryce Eldridge will, I presume, be the number one prospect on the Giants list by a pretty wide margin. And also definitely on the 101 and probably pretty high up the 101. And I do a podcast about the Mets and other stuff with Jeffrey Paranastro called For All You Kids Out There. I cannot imagine the crossover listenership between this podcast and that.
Hey, the New York Mets come out of the Giants leaving. So there's still a little bit of synergy there.
We're coming up on our 500th episode, and we tend to do episode lengths that are like your episodes with Dave, like an hour 45, 2 hours. So there's like 1,000 hours of me talking about baseball on a podcast on the internet, if you're really that interested.
There you go. Well, good luck to the Mets. Hopefully that they give you some happy smiles over these next few days. I guess game three is actually early tomorrow.
It's 5 p.m. Eastern, so 2 p.m. for you guys. I am trying to figure out how I'm going to actually watch that. I may just kind of duck out of work a little early. I may just like go in early and duck out early.
There you go. All right. Check out Jarrett on Baseball Prospectus. So thanks again for coming on. And I love it whenever we get a chance to do this. So appreciate you. So for Jarrett, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
Hey, football fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You?
The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes.
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.